Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello everyone, welcome to the podcast. So after an exciting weekend of rugby, round three of the Six Nations is done and dusted. Ireland continuing their winning ways by beating Wales. Scotland retaining the Calcutta Cup for the fourth consecutive year. Yes, that is fourth consecutive year. And there was last minute drama in Lille where Italy were merely inches away from beating France. Meanwhile, England A were in action, putting on a dominant display over a Portugal 15 and showing Steve Borthwick the breadth of talent eagerly waiting in the wings for the national team. Joining me to discuss and debate all things rugby is, of course, the guru himself, Steve Cording. Hi, Steve.
Yes, let's talk all things rugby and not football this weekend.
Okay, why would that be?
Well, I think you don't want to talk about football either, do you, after yesterday?
I don't know what you're talking about. I mean,
Saturday's trip to Old Trafford was not a successful one, let's put it that way. And I think you had a similarly unfortunate trip to Wembley yesterday.
I did. I just wondered when one of my teams were going to win at the weekend. I hate to say it, but in my day, I went to watch Chelsea beat Man United in the cup final with a Didier Drogba goal in the last few minutes, and then on the Sunday Wasp beat Toulouse in the European Cup final. So that's what you call a great sporting weekend. This weekend was completely different.
It was. So I went up to Manchester with my son Alfie on Saturday, watched United lose, then watched England lose on the coach on the way home, then Alfie lost his cup semi-final on Sunday morning. It was a pretty tough weekend to take. Ooh.
Anyway, let's talk more positively. Our special guest this week was originally due to be with us before Christmas but picked up a little injury and couldn't make it, so I'm delighted to say he's with us now. It's Harlequins winger and scorer of a hat-trick, not just one try, not two but three, for England A in that game against Portugal. Caden, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all good, thank you. A bit battered and bruised first 80 minutes for a while, but no, all good, thank you.
Excellent. Now obviously a handful of players have already been capped. You had quite a young team really, didn't you? Lots of players knocking on the door for a place in Steve Borthwick's squad. We've got to balance it a bit. It wasn't a full-strength Portugal side, certainly not the one that beat Fiji in the World Cup. But it's still, having been in your position a few times, it's nice to get a run out in an England jersey against an international team, no?
Yeah, definitely. And I think to chuck a load of young boys in together in a different environment, and you have three training sessions together, so to come up and produce a performance like that, yeah, we're all pretty happy with it.
And I obviously know George Skivington very well from my playing days at Wasps. He was the coach, along with one or two of his assistants. You're coach week in, week out very well at Harlequins. Sometimes it's nice to hear different voices and just see how things are done a bit differently.
Yeah, definitely. And George was definitely overseeing everything, but the likes of Sam Vesty at Northampton, who obviously they've been ripping it up in attack. So to get a different kind of view from him was pretty nice. And then Don Waldock, obviously at Gloucester as well, just to get different people's opinions on things and how they see it through their eyes is always helpful as a player.
Yeah, and I suppose there's limited things you can do in three training sessions. It's just a question of making sure that they've got a few moves that involve you, really,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly.
And unfortunately, they did. I mean, were you... anything Van der Merwe can do, you can do as well, right? Is that what he's saying?
He didn't quite run as far for your three tries,
exactly,
did you?
No, I were more walk-ins, yeah.
Now you've been involved in Steve Borthwick's squad,
yep,
and you've had a couple of injuries to contend with, which happens to us all. You're obviously quite keen to get back in the England squad. Do you wait for the England coach to phone you, or do you pick up the phone to the England coach and say, listen, I mean, obviously not now because he's busy and preparing, but do you keep that dialogue open, or is it just a question of just playing your way back into contention?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I came back, I did my MCL, my knee, right at the start of the season. I had a good chat with him then about what I need to improve on and what kind of things I can work on, biggest things things, obviously getting back fit. And then when I did my ankle again, I kind of knew what I had to work with. But yeah, Steve's very much about keeping that dialogue open.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's good.
Contacting different coaches if you want to work on your defence, contacting Kev Sinfield. So yeah, it's very much an open dialogue.
Were you at Loughborough University for the 3 days that you were away then? Were you?
Yeah, we were up there most of the week, and then we went and did a captain's run at Welford Road, and then we stayed in a hotel just next to
and
that.
And did I hear right on commentary that you had a game of cricket? Is that right, while you were up there? Or not? No.
We had a game, we did a bit of cricket in the team run.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, Sam Vesty's all about getting touches on different kind of balls, so it was all
clean bowled Alfie Barbary, is that right?
I did clean bowl Alfie Barbary. That's great how that's got around. Yeah, you won't be happy that that's got around.
Is there a social media clip for that or not?
I don't hope so. I don't know. I'm not sure, but yeah, I'd like to think
Speaking of social media, I mean, obviously, having gone away on international duty, you know, the players from Quinns would focus on that. But do you all still keep in contact with each other on a WhatsApp group in terms of the international players that are away? Or is it very much you probably don't hear from them when they're gone?
We've got a pretty close squad. So, yeah, I feel like we all keep in contact. We do have a big Quinns group chat, but I feel like it's more the individual connection. So, yeah, we'll be messaging them, seeing how the camp's going, hoping they'll all be playing on the weekend.
It's a weird time, though, isn't it, at the moment? Because you're off to Portugal this afternoon for some warm weather training. We're not jealous at all. But I mean, there's actually no rugby at all going on this weekend. Top flight rugby, obviously, at lower level, there's still games, but it's probably the first time that's ever happened during the Six Nations, isn't it? So how do you keep that motivation going?
Well, especially as he's just come back from an injury.
Exactly.
He's desperate for a game. There's no game to play.
Yeah, I think that was the most frustrating thing for me. Got back, got on the bench against Leicester, played 20-30 minutes, and all I wanted to do was carry on that run. But yeah, unfortunately, there was no rugby.
And I guess the only game that you could have played in for Quinns was on Friday night, and you couldn't play in that because you were playing for England A.
Exactly,
so.
Yeah. Well, at least I got 80 minutes under the belt in this one. But I think some boys have played 17, 18 games in a row since the start of the season. So this break's probably come at a good time for them, whereas, it was just a frustrating time for me.
And you're there for a week in Portugal?
Yeah.
Do they give you a bit of a who you're rooming with, or do you know what's going on?
I think
on?
We're staying at Brown's. I think it's like little apartments, so I feel like they'll probably keep all the back three together, or the prop. Well, hopefully they will, because I don't really want to be with a big snoring prop. But, so hopefully I'll be with all the backs. Which
same old, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Although I actually room with Josh Yusefa Scott, and he was the silent sleeper this week.
Honestly,
so yeah.
Honestly, you move in with one of the backs, man, literally. They set up shop in the bathroom, and you've got a little shelf yourself. And they put all their products out there. And then there's a tiny little space in the corner.
What are you trying to say? Takes pride in his appearance, and you didn't care.
No, that's Danny Kerr. Maybe I'm thinking about Danny Kerr. I mean, I obviously don't need any hair products, and so
you taking your golf clubs or not?
No, I'm actually not. I'm not a massive golfer, but I think there's been a golf day booked for the boys. We've got one day off.
Honestly, you can't take the pay. You take your golf clubs. I just come back from injury. Yeah, just rock up with my clubs.
I reset.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I mean, to be fair, we used to do that. I'll never forget. Clyde Woodward took us down to a training camp with the Royal Maroons. And Clive's there with the Brigadier on the front lawn just preparing, and Matt Dawson walks straight up to him with his golf clubs.
See you in 4 hours.
Yeah. Which is obviously just a joke, but Clive didn't see the funny side of that, no.
Funnily enough, not. So what will you do when you get some downtime out there? I mean, I guess the weather's probably quite nice and warm, is it?
Probably the backs will be sunbathing, yeah. No, I think, there's a golf day booked. I think we'll just head down to the beach. And just enjoy a bit of winter sun.
It is nice there. Portugal's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I guess, at what point do you think everybody will start clicking back into club gear? Because we've obviously still got, another 3 weeks of Six Nations before we start going again. And obviously you've got Saracens, isn't it? The first game back.
It's
pretty big game to start with again. I mean, will it feel like another pre-season?
Yeah, I think these next few weeks are going to be pretty tough. But I think different teams have gone about these 6-7 weeks in different ways. I think we've obviously front-loaded our two games against London Scottish and Munster, and now we've got these 3 weeks just to prepare ourselves. Some teams have got, I think Northampton have got Stormers and stuff in the coming weeks, so I think they've got games leading up to it. So yeah, I'm pretty sure
it's quite hard for these guys because, you know, as coaches, you've got to think, well, how many players are going to be involved in the Six Nations? You know, how many aren't? You know, what do we do with the ones who are involved when they come back? You know, do we put them straight back in the team? You know, it's almost like you're looking at it on a week-by-week basis, really. I mean, you know, once the Premiership starts again, which is in three weeks' time,
I think,
you've got a block of seven games, and then that's it. It's just a straight run-through. And, you've almost got to pick up where you left off, haven't you? Hit the ground running. Where are Quinns at the moment?
We're second in the league, so we want to keep that momentum going.
That's fantastic, really. So it's it's tricky, to be honest with you.
Shall we touch on Murrayfield? Now, I'm not expecting Caden to have too much of an opinion like you have, Mr. Dallaglio, but you were quite positive yesterday, I thought, in your Sunday Times column, compared to some of the vitriol, shall we say, that's coming from other areas today. Was it a positive performance?
Listen, the results are everything in rugby. Do you know what? It's easy when you see a result like that to think that England are just the worst team in the world and Scotland are world beaters. But as we all know, that the margins are a bit finer than that. I think England had emotion, they had passion, they started the game with real ambition. I just think they overplayed a little bit. You know, England at the minute are damned if they do and damned if they don't. They played in the World Cup, you know, attack for England used to be two phases, boot the ball up in the air, see you later. You know, which if a winger, it's not particularly nice. That nearly got us to a World Cup final and probably would have won us a World Cup final. But no one wants to play like that. So everyone's having a go at England. They then change the way they play. And, you know, they made 22 mistakes. So you turn over the ball 22 times against a decent, very decent Scotland team, and you're going to make mistakes. So on the one side, I was actually really pleased with England because I knew that, you know, with the backstory of what happened with Jamie George leading up to the game, I thought that they showed, you know, tremendous courage and ambition. Unfortunately, they just overplayed a little bit. It needed some of those experienced players just to stick to the game plan. Because when you go 10-0 up away from home, you shouldn't be losing by the margin that you were.
No, well, Mauro Toji has said that post-match today, in today's coverage, that the game plan was ignored and that they started playing hot potato rugby, which obviously is what accounted for 22 turnovers. Just looking at England, though, going back far enough, I mean, I remember in the 1991 World Cup, as far back as then, that England were accused of playing boring 10-man rugby to get to the World Cup final, then tried to play an expansive game and lost the final to Australia. Now, is it always been this way for England?
No.
Are they always caught between?
Not really,
I mean, 2003, the great thing about that team was they played the conditions. You played the conditions and that's the way you played. Whereas at the moment, we seem to be intent on going, this is our game plan, we've got to stick to it, can't change it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a balance, isn't it? Test match rugby is about good defence, good set piece, you know, but also just building your way into the game, you know, and keeping your error count down. I mean, England didn't give that many penalties away. I think 5 or 6 in the game. You know, set piece was good. It's just the turnovers, you know. And the most vulnerable defences come from turnovers. And the mistakes that we made in knocking the ball on and just presenting the ball to Scotland was thing. And I just think, I'd be interested to hear Caden's point of view. You know, when you break down the components of any game of rugby, you've got set piece, you've got defence, you've got all these things that you've got to deal with, you know, special teams. How much time do teams actually spend on attack? Because, you know, and focusing on the attack, because the challenge for any coach when you've only got a limited amount of game time is, where can I make the most gains? Well, if we've got a good, strong set piece and a good, strong defence, then that's where we spend most of our time and all. And then we go to attack. Whereas actually, certainly in the WASC team that I played in, less time on the set piece, which is, you know, sometimes can be your undoing because we used to lose a lot of scrums and lineouts, but when we had the ball, we knew exactly what to do with it. I'm just interested to see what that balance is like at club level, for instance.
Well, yeah, Quinns, I think we're probably pretty similar to that WASC team. I think attack is in our DNA. I think with Nick Evans running it, we have a lot of our focus on attack. But like you said, in this modern day rugby, defence and set piece is such a big battle, especially when you step up to that test level. So I think there probably is a huge emphasis on that, because ultimately set piece and defence can win you test matches and you can play almost that boring brand of rugby and win games by kicking it a lot. But I think you have to have an emphasis on that transition, because like you said, when defences are at their most vulnerable, you need to be ready to take those one, maybe two opportunities that you do get at the highest level, because there aren't many.
No.
You just need to be ready to be able to take them when they're on.
Which is what Scotland did.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, first of all, for all our Scottish listeners, those living in England, anyway, a credit to them, because they play very well. And they're a better side than I think people give them credit for. You know, tough World Cup group. And they're probably, in terms of their selection, in terms of their coaching group, they've probably had the most stability in the last sort of 12 months. You know, everyone else has sort of changed a few coaches, changed a few players, and therefore they're, you know, they look good. I mean, they do look good. They probably should have beaten France, and they'd be going into St. Patrick's Day, you know, with a Six Nations showdown against Ireland. So, but it is now getting, you know, it's getting painful for English fans, because I think we've won 1 out of the last 7 Calcutta Cup matches, which
What do you think of Doohan van der Meer as a player? And what do you think of his second try?
It's the winners' club. They all stick together.
I mean, I've seen you. Obviously, I've seen a couple of tries that you scored like that in the corner when you've had a defender coming across. Never when there's been nobody there have you tried to put it down.
I think he must practice it or have it in his head. He's used to doing those finishes. So I think rather than eliminate the risk of trying to dive in, and Tommy Freeman was coming across to try and knock him into touch, I think he just maybe a bit for the cameras as well. Probably. I think it looks
brave,
a bit cooler.
Brave boys to put the ball down with one hand. I'll tell you what now.
In the old days, it wouldn't have been a try because he'd have been in touch, wouldn't he? Touching the flag. So.
Yeah, exactly. But
phenomenal player though.
No, but then again, you look at that game on the weekend, and Scotland did only have three or four moments. Yeah. They just took every single one of them. I think if you look at the match on a whole, I don't think they didn't dominate us as much as their scoreline probably suggests. It was just those three, four moments with when you got players like Finn Russell, Hugh Jones, Doohan van der Merwe, and they took their moments.
Well, their red zone efficiency was unbelievable. Yeah. It was 4 points per entry versus two for England, which says it all. But to your point, Lyle, I mean, just looking at the numbers there, I mean, in terms of carries, metres made, scrum success, line-out success, England were ahead.
They played well. I mean, thing is, if they'd have played like they played in the World Cup England in those conditions, they could have easily won that game. But they're obviously, you know, they're trying to add layers onto their game. They're trying to improve the attacking structure. I just think 10-0 start, great. But then we just went, we almost got a bit too carried away, a bit too pleased with ourselves, and just started throwing passes that, you know, all over the place. I mean, Ollie Lawrence is a fantastic player, but every pass he got...
One wanting to touch.
I think we just need to simplify the game a bit more in attack until you start to develop layers. We're not Ireland yet. We haven't got that kind of cohesion and that game understanding. Just, I don't know. I mean, it's funny, you know, in my day for England, the backs used to have about 36 moves of 38 moves, and they used about three of them. The same ones, because the same ones are the ones that work really well. Yeah. You know, so I don't know.
Well, we'll get Nick Purrywell, the Evening Standard rugby correspondent, on shortly to talk about the game. But would you make many changes for the Ireland game?
Not really.
What do you say to those?
Apart from bringing Caden Merlin, I would be making a few changes. As I've said many, many times in my life, you need trust and consistency. You need to trust a group of players, and you need to be consistent with what they... Just spend a bit more time on attack is what I would do in training. But also, the players, in my opinion, and there are enough senior players in that group. Maritoji must be, is he in 80s or 90s caps for us now? You know, you got Jamie George, who was magnificent at the weekend, even to play that game in the first place, very courageous after losing his mother, Jane, to cancer. George Ford, there's a lot of experience in that group. And the only question I'd be asking if I was Steve Borthwick, I'd be pulling all of those senior players in and saying, guys, you're in charge on the pitch. What were you doing? What were you thinking? You're 10-0 up. You know, one of you or a few of you have got to bring it in and just stick to the game plan on the field. You know, you don't want to hear Maritoji saying afterwards, we went away from the game plan and we started throwing the ball around. You've got enough experience now in that group. Yes, it's a young squad. Yes, there's new coaches, but come on, guys. I mean, it's your responsibility on the field to stick to what we've discussed. And they should be having a bit of a look in the mirror themselves and just be saying, yeah, we'll hold our hands up and accept responsibility for that.
Yeah. Before we move on, I've got to mention Dr. James Robson. You must have many memories of him. His last game at Murrayfield as Scotland team doctor. Obviously, you must have worked with him at the Lions.
I did, for 97. Brilliant in 97. Didn't really have any need for him. I was 24. You don't need a doctor at 24. You're fit as a fiddle. 2001, I spent far too much time with him because I did my cruciate and then broke my ankle. In fact, he put my ankle back into place on a field in New Zealand.
Ooh.
Yeah, it wasn't nice. I fractured, dislocated it against Bay of Plenty.
Yeah.
And then, spent the next 3 months in New Zealand, horrifically. I remember the surgeon said, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is we fixed your ankle. It's got a 6-inch plate in it. The bad news is you can't fly home for 2 months. I said, mate, that's not bad news. That's catastrophic news. And the Lions just went off on the next day. But James Robson, magnificent. What a stint, really, as a team doctor.
And what a send-off for him as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know... Scots would just say it's normal now to beat England, isn't it?
Well, I think so, unfortunately. Yeah. But anyway, looking back, obviously, Caden, once you get back from your son in Portugal, you've got to start switching on for the Premiership. Quinn's been second behind Northampton, and obviously you're going to come up against them in the big summer kickoff at Twickenham, which is on the 27th of April. I mean, how different are those games at Twickenham feel to being at the Stoop, I've heard a lot made this weekend about what a great atmosphere Murrayfield had, and wouldn't it be great if we could have that for England matches? Now, obviously, when you have Quinns playing there, it's a completely different atmosphere to what you get for an England game. It must be pretty special to play there for Quinns, and hopefully, obviously, one day for England.
Yeah, hopefully. But yeah, it's an incredible atmosphere, I think. I was actually in the stands for the big game this year, so it was a bit of a different perspective after playing the last four, and yeah, the whole place was buzzing. I'm hoping we get a similar turnout to the big summer kickoff. Hopefully a bit of sun. And obviously, you'd like to say two of the two best attacking sides in the league going head-to-head, first versus second. So, yeah, it should be a good battle. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, is it a misnomer that about Twickenham? Do they need to improve the atmosphere, or is it, do they need to improve the play first?
I think just one level, follow the other. A club level, I think it's superb. You know?
Yeah.
I just question what's going on. International level, I have to say. I mean, I haven't really had the match day experience for a while, but when I went there for the England-Wales game, I was quite shocked at what I saw.
Yeah.
I mean, for starters, there's, you know, way too many people outside buying drinks when a game's on.
Yes.
You know, and you get up out of your seat about sort of 50 times a game just to let people back in. So, I mean, compared to other places, the match day experience could be better. I think when people arrive in a stadium and they leave, you can't guarantee that the 80 minutes is going to be perfect,
no.
Especially in rugby. But what you can guarantee is you want to give people a great time from the minute they arrive to the minute they leave. And I don't think that happens at Twickenham as well as it could. But unfortunately, there is a scarcity of tickets. I mean, I paid £167 each for two tickets to England-Wales, and I'm not sure I got my value for money, if I'm honest with you.
The one thing I noticed this weekend, actually, about being at football gets very criticised a lot, but obviously with no alcohol inside the ground, I actually got to sit down and watch the game, and nobody left their seat until just before half-time.
I mean, listen, it's a double-edged sword, because I can only imagine what profits they take behind the bar during a game, probably quite considerable, versus what they don't, and I don't know. But yes, I agree with you. Shut the bar for 80 minutes, keep everyone in the stadium.
Twickenham would still sell out even if you couldn't buy a drink during the game.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you'd probably get a very different demographic at the game as well. I think that was a big difference as well, how family orientated like the big games are, and you have all these youth and kids bring energy, and I think they're there to watch the rugby, watch their favourite players, and they are invested for the full 80 minutes and excited about the whole game. And I think sometimes people are just, they literally go to Twickenham. It's the biggest pub in the world, isn't it? I think people go there just to drink and spend time with their mates. So yes, it's obviously very different, and with the ticket prices, that's probably part of the reason. But it'd be pretty cool to try and build this younger generation coming to international matches.
So Caden, for you, just as a parting gift, obviously, you know, you're back from injury. It's great for you that you're back on the pitch. The Premiership's now the focus for you and for Quinns. Summer tour, winning a place on that and trying to get yourself, in that England squad. Are England going away? Or are they?
Yeah, to Japan,
New Zealand.
Yeah.
Two tests there. I'm not
exactly. So
Until the international.
I know you don't jump too far ahead. You'll be saying, I just want to get back playing for Quinns, and obviously we'll, you know, try and be part of a successful Premiership winning side. But back of your mind, you're thinking, you know, I've got to try and get myself back in the England picture as well.
Yeah, 100%. How many squads have you been in now, and you've not been?
Yeah, fair few. I did autumn Six Nations World Cup.
Yeah, that must be so frustrating when you...
It is frustrating, but look, I've got to just keep working on what I need to work on in the coach's eyes and keep playing week in, week out. Obviously, the tough run of injuries at the start of the season probably hasn't helped my cause, but obviously, they're backing a few new players on form as well. Tommy Freeman, Faye Wobosa on the wings, who have been unbelievable in the Premiership this year. So, yeah, hopefully I can emulate some of their form that they've had at the start of the season. And, get myself on that summer tour.
It sounds like you get more feedback now than you did under maybe the previous head coach when you were in squads under Mr. Jones, perhaps.
I think it's very much an open conversation now. Like we spoke about earlier, I think I can have that chat and I can send those messages and be a bit more open with Steve. So, yeah, it's definitely a better relationship there.
Yeah, I think it's confusing, the feedback from Eddie Jones, that's all I have to say. But listen, we wish you all the very best. If it's any consolation, I got into my first England squad in 93. Mm-hmm. God, that's a long time ago, Steve, isn't it? Hey, haircut 100 at number one, were they?
Can't remember. What date were you born?
99.
I got into the England squad in 93, and I didn't make my debut for another 2 years after that. So it does take time.
Yeah. So you were four when When he won the World Cup.
I was, yeah.
Well, listen, we wish you, thank you for coming on again.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank
you. We're delighted you're back fit. Mm-hmm. Have a wonderful time in Portugal. Find some space for us. And good luck for the rest of the season for Quins. And let's see you on that plane to New Zealand.
Yeah, and we'll get you back in before you play in the Premiership playoff final.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Look forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, finally, tickets for the big summer kickoff are available now via the Quins website. And you'll find the link in our episode notes, so get yourselves a few tickets and down to that one.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions. Right, should we get back to Saturday's game at Murrayfield? It's a good time to bring in the Evening Standard's rugby correspondent, Nick Purawal. Nick, you were up in Edinburgh. You saw it all unfold. What were the key messages that Steve Borthwick was saying post-match? Because he probably looked as frustrated as the rest of us.
Well, I think he was trying to keep a lid on his anger, but he couldn't stop the steam coming out of his ears, to be quite honest. I don't think he's been so damning of his own team in the time he's been in charge, but he was doing that while being quite measured as well. But I think there'll be some difficult words said when England reconvene in New York on Wednesday for training in this Fallow Week. And I think some of those will basically be from the coaches to the players. We believe the plan works, but if you stray from it, then it doesn't work. And when we tell you to do something, you've got to do it. And I think the players were fairly candid about, you know, deviating from the plan themselves anyway. So, you know, they seem to think they know what's wrong, and they seem to think that the plan they do have will still deliver the goods. But I think this, it's not really a team that can continue to develop, as it's a team that's expected to win. That's what Mario Tojo was saying. We expect to win every game, and that's the expectation upon us. Well, if that's the case, then it's time to start upping the levels, isn't it?
I mean, listen, we must give enormous credit to Scotland, especially their player of the match, Duan van der Merwe, who made history as the first Scot / South African / Scot to get a hat-trick in a Calcutta Cup match. He was on fire. But what you're saying from Steve Borthwick's perspective is that the finger will be pointed in the direction of all the senior players, really, because it's admirable that Amara Itoje said, you know, we played hot potato rugby and we went off plan. But really, what he should have said is we as senior players have to take the responsibility for the fact that we went off plan, because, you know, with Jamie George, with Danny Kerr, with George Ford, with Amara Itoje, with the number of caps they've got between them, you know, they are the people that are in charge of executing that plan. And, you know, 22 turnovers and playing a little bit high-risk rugby at a time when, you know, when you're playing away from home is not the way to win games, is it?
I think it's the most exciting game I've seen England be involved in for some time. So there's one level that says, well, credit to them because they're trying to do something different. But it only works if you can minimise that error count. And, you know, Steve Borthwick and everyone involved are saying that it will take time to build that attack. Well, I think you only have to look at Italy, and Gonzalo Casada's had three matches in charge, and their two-sided attack is extremely fluent. It's lovely to watch, but it's also making inroads. And forget the result, because it was the same when they played England. And I think you can see that it is possible to build an attack quickly that can get the job done. And England is still not doing that. So it's right to ask questions now about why they can't. And you look at the tries that Scotland scored, and they are very capable of scoring tries very, very quickly. And the second Duhan van der Merwe try obviously comes from a poor England mistake. But being in the stadium, I think something that didn't quite come across on television coverage, on the replays I saw at least, was that as soon as he received the ball, he knew it was on to score. So he's 60 metres out. Straight away, he wasn't just looking at beating Ben Earl. He could see exactly, as soon as the ball was in his hands, he knew he was going to score, basically. He completely backed himself, and he didn't think twice, didn't second guess it. And, you know, Scotland are a long way ahead of England in that respect. And in 1972, the last time that Scotland beat England four times in a row, but 1896, the last time that Scotland beat England four times in a row in the Five Nations, and they've never done it in Six Nations before, Queen Victoria was still on the throne back then. So that tells you everything you need to know about the fact that this is almost uncharted territory for England, and they should see it in those terms because it's not good enough.
I don't think even you or I were alive then, were we long? Queen Victoria, maybe no. Not. So Nick, what do England do now to try and reverse the tide and overcome? I mean, I stupidly last week said that England would beat Ireland at Twickenham, which looking now is probably the worst prediction I might have ever made. But then you never know. They might turn up and they might do it. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a good chance that the plan all along would have been to bring Freddie Stewart back at fullback for this game anyway, because of the way Ireland will play. They'll put a lot in the air. They're very strong there anyway. So you'd have expected him potentially to come back. I do think George Furbank is a real talent, and I want to see him get opportunities. I wonder if there's a chance that they could move him to the wing and in place of Elliot Daly, for example. But also, Emmanuel Feyi-Wabosso just looks born to it in many ways. There's obviously a reason why they're being cautious with him, and he hasn't been tested under the high ball really in Test rugby yet. And I think that's perhaps where they don't want to expose him too soon. But really, in the long term, I half wonder whether Feyi-Wabosso is someone they should be looking to develop as a potential option at inside centre. He's played centre before. He seems to have all the skills capable of that, and I think that's something that they should look at.
Definitely. So we are working with QBE Business Insurance, who have produced their predictor for the Six Nations, and it's been pretty accurate so far, Lowell. Got 2 out of 3 right winners this weekend. It actually said Ireland 25, Wales 16, Scotland 23, England 22. The one it didn't get right, which just shows how hard it is to predict any rugby games, was France 45, Italy 15, which was a draw. So the predictor has simulated the tournament 10,000 times, producing the outcome from 150,000 games, with every match replicated by generating a number of tries, conversions and penalties scored by each team. So the final score for Ireland-Wales is actually 31-7. We all know how it played out at Murrayfield in the end, and obviously we're talking about the draw 13-13. Between Italy and France. Now, you made an interesting point to me off-air, Lawrence, about kicks. Now, 13-13, they've got a chance, Italy, to create history, and the ball falls off the tee. Paolo Galbisi, he then only had 8 seconds to try and kick that penalty. Now, in my book, because the French had started to move forward towards the ball, which they shouldn't have done anyway because it was a penalty, he should have had another 40 seconds. Does the shot clock work?
Well, you know, first and foremost, the laws around the non-kicking opposition players need to be clarified, because we saw the recent charge down of George Ford's kick. You know, referees, once the process has started, don't seem to want to send the players back again and say, no, you set off too early. Personally, I wouldn't let players charge kicks down. I think it's a waste of time. But I would speed up the process. So either go straight to drop goals like Sevens does, or you put a shot clock on. It's 30 seconds, no charge downs allowed. And the clock starts when the kicker places the ball on the tee. I mean, placing a ball on a tee, taking a few steps backwards and having 30 seconds seems to me like plenty of time. And what I would say is that if you start your run-up, as in, if you're the kicker and you start your run-up before the 30 seconds has elapsed, you're allowed to take the kick. I mean, it's not like, sorry, you haven't moved yet. So, do you know what I mean? The kicker knows that he's got to get a routine in place that take from the minute he puts the ball down on the tee, it's 30 seconds. He's not got anyone running towards him, all right? And as soon as he starts his run, he can still make the kick. You know, that for me is enough.
Why do you think charge downs are a waste of time?
Because I think the kickers have got a very difficult job.
Oh.
I really do, and I don't think it needs to be made that harder. Right. We just need to speed the game up, that's all.
Right.
Just need to speed the game up, simple as that.
But on the plus side, looking at that game, you must have been delighted for the result for Italy. I think we were all rooting for Italy to win that game, yeah, weren't we, at the end.
I'll be honest with you, whilst I didn't predict a draw, I thought Italy were going to play their best game against France. That, you know, they got hammered by Ireland, but they actually played very well. And you can see Wales have been hammered by Ireland, but they didn't play too badly. They just gave away so many penalties in the match. And when you break that Wales performance down, I mean, there were moments they got down into Ireland's heart, you know, 22, quite a few times. They just came away with nothing. You know, Ireland were able to defensively shut them out. Every time Ireland went back up the other end, they got points. And that is the game of rugby union at the moment. You've got this block of rugby that happens in the middle between the two 22s. And then it doesn't matter how good or bad you are going to get half a dozen opportunities down your opponent's end. And if you're bad, you don't take enough of them. And if you're really good, you take all of them. Scotland didn't even have to get down our end of the field. They just took, what, 3 out of 4 opportunities, I think. And that's the game. I mean, that's what it is. It's about being ruthless. It's about being clinical. And it's about taking your opportunities when they present themselves. But very proud, disappointed they couldn't come away with a famous victory, Italy.
I speculated with producer Jules before we came on that the French either, they'd opened a load of doors and created a draft, or somebody had opened the roof to blow that ball over, because they need something at the moment, don't they? They're in a bit of a mess.
Something is not quite right within French rugby. Don't know whether there's a financial squeeze. You know, the sort of sidelining of Ibanez, is there's more to that than meets the eye. You know, how can you have a team manager who's, you know, everything's hokey-cokey, and then they lose one game in the World Cup and he's gone? That's definitely a personal relationship breakdown between him and the man with those funny glasses that are even funnier than yours. The French.
Thanks for that. Yeah,
Fabien Galtier. I mean, they are oversized glasses, aren't they? He's like Mike TV, isn't he? What is it?
A little bit. Yeah, I think bigger rims are in fashion, aren't they? But not that big.
No, I think he's gone back to Joe 90, isn't he? He's gone back to
Joe 90
Thunderbirds. And just pulled those out of the bag.
There's a character.
Yeah. But yeah, listen, things are not quite right in French rugby, because you know a team that is that good, even without Antoine Dupont, should not be, you know, drawing with Italy.
Can you remember what the score was in the Rugby World Cup? France 60, Italy 7.
I know. I mean,
what a turnaround.
But that is all meant. It's all a mental process, isn't it, really? So, yeah, I would say that there'll be a lot of question marks. And, you know, English rugby is continually asking questions about and examining ourselves. But I've got to say, the French will be asking similar questions and just saying, what the hell is going on here?
So anyway, we've got this bizarre fallow week coming up. I guess we'll have to start watching Top 14 in URC, won't we? Because there's nothing else to watch. And then we'll get into the next round of Six Nations games next week. But just looking ahead, just have a little sneaky peek at what the QBE predictor is forecasting for round 4, which is Scotland will take on Italy, and that one is Scotland will win 35-14. In fact, it's predicting away wins in every game. So France will head to Cardiff, and that one is going to be 23-16 to France, according to Predictor. And then the big one for us, which is England against Ireland, and the QB Predictor is saying 27-18. Is there any way that England can beat Ireland? And she's not here, Sarah. She's here in spirit, obviously, but Mr. Sarah Elgin, Simon Easterby, has done an incredible job with that defence, hasn't he? And he probably doesn't get the credit he deserves. Is there any way that England can overcome that defence?
Yes. Listen, in any game of rugby, the best team doesn't always win. I mean, I was lucky enough to play in a lot of WASF sides that, you know, going into games, we weren't on results or form, we're not the best team, but you can win games of rugby. So, yeah, of course. I mean, listen, Ireland are magnificent. The coaching team, Easterby, Farrell, Cat, you know, they all deserve huge, huge credit. Paul O'Connell, you know, they've got a very, very good framework, methodology, structure, individuals, etc., banging form. And look, they're going for back-to-back Grand Slams, which has never been done by a single side in the Six Nations. So they've got their own piece of history they're trying to create. But yeah, of course teams can win. I mean, I don't agree with that QBE predictor. I think they're going to get one of those game results wrong. I don't know which one it is. I'm hoping it's England. But England can win this game, no doubt about it. There is a much bigger performance in all of those players. So yeah, obviously Ireland start as favourites. But I can tell you now, if I was playing for my club against Leinster coming over here, I'd expect to win. I'd expect to win, and I'd make it as hard as possible. What England need to do is, yes, they're evolving their own style, but you got to have a few little tricks up your sleeve. When you're not as good as your opponent, and I don't think England are as good as Ireland yet, in fact, by quite a long way, you need to have one or two little things up your sleeve. That's what the Scots used to do. Used to, you can ambush sides with a change of tactics, with a couple of little cute manoeuvres. And I think we need to start thinking about being a little bit more innovative out on the rugby field. As a group of senior players, I'd be going, right, who can we get stuck into and wind up here a little bit and find a way of winning? Find a way to win. Don't just wait for things to happen.
And we need an atmosphere like there was 2 years ago. I remember it well when who was sent off right at the beginning of the game.
Well, it was Charlie Yule.
Charlie Yule.
But listen,
but the crowd were so behind the team then because they were up against it for virtually the entire match.
Wouldn't it be nice for England for a change to spoil someone else's party? Wouldn't it?
It would.
I mean, if someone comes into your own home, you don't let them rob you of your possessions, do you?
No.
So if Ireland want to come to Twickenham, you know, it's like having someone burgle your own home.
Mm.
You know, send them away. Simple as that.
Don't ever rob Mr. Delalio's home. That's all I'll say.
Well, yeah. Listen, we're on that wonderfully bright and breezy note, we will look ahead to round four in more detail next time. But it only remains for me to thank our special guest, Caden Murley. And thanks, of course, to the Batman and Robin of the Evening Standard, Steve Cording and Nick Purewell. And, of course, thanks to Vox Pod Studios.
Does that make me Robin? Are you Batman? Am I Robin?
We're like the Del Boy and Rodney, Batman and Robin, aren't we?
Well, I'm definitely not Rodney.
Well, I'll leave you two to argue that. We'll be back next week. Until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.